What is up, Level Up Nation, and welcome to your home for gaming esports news, the Level Up Podcast, episode 142, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined once again for the 142nd time by the King of the Courtside. Joey, what's up, buddy?
Doing well, John. We're still going. 142, working our way up to 150. Might have to have something special for 150.
Well, definitely 150, definitely 200. definitely 250. I think we just need to celebrate everything in 50s.
Hey-o.
It sounds good. Sounds good. Nation, make sure you follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at the Level Up Podcast. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're at it on Twitter, give your favorite hosts the follow as well. You can find Joey at Courtside King, myself at Fiasco. If you're watching here live on Twitch, those beautiful mugshots you are staring at, hi, that's us. Right below that is the Twitter handles. Joey, you look tired. You're rubbing your eyes. You're a sleepy, sleepy man today.
I'll tell you what. I've been staring at a computer monitor all day, and this light in this new room is just so bright up in my upper left vision. I feel like I almost need sunglasses for this.
They do make gamer glasses for something like that, and I'm pretty sure it's for blue light, but not. Anywho, if you're listening on the podcast later on down the road, those handles will be in the show notes for you below. And Nation, while you're at it, do us a solid. If you enjoy the show, leave us a review. Reviews go a long way for the show, helping grow the Level Up Nation and getting more people access to this amazing show. We are now available on Spotify and Stitcher as well, including iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. And reviews, again, do go a long way to help the show and grow listeners. So when you have a moment, we would really appreciate if you could give us a nice little review on any of those platforms. Nation, the LEC has crowned a winner for their summer split. Joey might not be happy to talk about that topic, but they have a champion. And now they're looking for their final team to represent the LEC in Worlds 2019, heading into their regional gauntlet as well. And for a third week in a row, Sony is in the news, but not for a good reason this time. In fact, it's pretty stupid why they're in the news, and I cannot wait to talk about it. Joey, aside from Sony trying to rebrand something, what else are we talking about this week on the Level Up Podcast?
John, we have a whole lot this week. We have a number of roster moves. On top of that, a ton of partnerships. This actually might be our biggest partnership episode yet. And we even had to cut out probably about 5 to 6 of them as well. So we have quite a slate of those. On top of that, we're talking some big news in CSGO with ESL and DreamHack setting up an open circuit. So we are looking at a possible full season format for CSGO coming in as well.
All right, Joey, we have our topics. There is a lot to cover this episode. I feel like we're going to need a little bit of assistance, a little bit of liquid aid, if I could please here, sir. Joey, I'm talking, of course, about the drink of choice. I need, sir, for the 142nd time. It doesn't have to be alcohol, Joey. It can be anything. Your beverage of choice.
John, it is just a glass of water tonight. Yeah, unfortunately, I'm lacking, guys. I think this is the second week in a row, so I will be heavy with the alcohol next week to make up for it.
All right. So Joey, I've been slacking myself, so I'm making it up today. I'll make sure I pour this. This right here is a beautiful glass. It's technically a wine glass, I think, but I'm going to use it as a mixer.
It is. I think it's a stemless wine glass.
Well, you know what? It still works. That is an Almoretto Sour, a.k.a. Oh. One of the first alcoholic beverages I ever had. Maybe before I was 21, I don't know, but the history before 21 was a little blurry, so I'll neither confirm nor deny that. But one of my first alcoholic beverages, and it's tasty and delicious, so I'll be enjoying that during the show, Joey.
Blurry, unlike your new camera over there. Hey-o. Chat is loving the new camera.
Yeah, so I finally figured out how to hook up my DSLR to the Elgato Cam Link. So really excited about that. Discovered the lighting in this room was absolutely horrific, so stuck a little light on top of that, and really excited to use this cam going forward. Joey, we need to hook you up on your end with some
I need
gear.
Something. This thing is just extra bright tonight.
You just need something on that back wall, that whiteness.
Yeah,
behind
my beautiful white wall here.
You're kind of blending in there. Joey,
I swear.
We have our topics. We have our beverages. I don't want to waste any more time. This might be a long one. Let's get right into gaming and esports news. Let's go.
Kicking things off with CSGO and Fnatic. They've continued with their CSGO roster overhaul, this time bidding farewell to Coach Jumpy and moving Samuelson from their team director role to their head coach role. Overall, Jumpy had a good role with the team. He ended up, I think they won 2 championships under him, but overall they did not meet the Fnatic legacy name. They actually lost their legacy status in CSGO. missing their first major in who knows how long. But on top of that, they ended up just deciding, hey, Jumpy, it was a great run with you, but at the same point, we need to move forward. We're shaking up the roster. We're going to shake up the coaching staff as well. So the team director now moving into that coaching role, he knows the three players that have stayed there. And on top of that, he knows the Fnatic system. So I think this is a good move, even if it is just going to be for the interim. Anything else on that? I know you follow Fnatic CSGO so closely over there, John.
Oh, yeah. Super close. Yeah, no, I mean, it does suck for Fnatic losing their legacy status, but if there's any team that can bounce back, it's definitely Fnatic. They're a well-proven organization, and they can pretty much handle anything. So it stinks for now as Fnatic fans, but going forward, I think their legacy status will come back soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing here is the fact that they are sticking in-house for the coach. So this was someone who was around while the team was successful and while the team struggled. I think the biggest advantage to it is the fact that you're keeping someone who knows the organization and knows the players already. But at the same point, it doesn't really bring in a fresh mindset. So I'm hoping they couple that not only with two new players, but also with a new analyst or two. I feel like bringing someone in from the outside in an analyst role could help change up tactics as well. Sticking with Fnatic, Dota, they have said goodbye to star mid laner Abed, as well as player manager Dubu. Dubu was the coach for the squad, I believe, the last 2 years, and then he subbed as support at TI. They're adding 23 Savage and Moon in his place. Again, I think this is decent moves. I don't know too much about these players. They are Southeast Asian. They both come from that particular area. So Fnatic is picking off rosters that they actually beat throughout the season. That, to me, adds a bit of a question mark. I think they wanted to keep Abed. He decided to move on. Pretty much like their mid laner, I believe mid one was his name prior to this. So I think there's something to be said, the fact that they cannot retain their talent, especially these very talented players in mid lane. They need to find a way to bring these players in, keep them for the long term, or it's just going to be keep being losses at TI over and over.
23 Savage sounds like one of those SoundCloud rappers. Is Fnatic dropping a new mixtape or something? What's going on here?
I was going to say that, or like a metal band. Yeah, I don't quite get the name 23 Savage. I've never seen him play, though, so I can't really speak on his play style too much. I mean, you and I follow Dota so well as well, outside of the prize pool counter.
For all I know, maybe he has 23 levels of savagery. Is savagery even a word? Can I get like an Urban Dictionary definition on that, please?
We are not going to look that up live on the show. but yeah, I mean, overall, it's interesting. And again, I think this is the first of many, John. We see this every year. After TI, after any major tournament in esports, there are a ton of roster moves. Fnatic just being one of those more notable organizations that's usually, I give them top 10 at TI, this year falling shy of that. But overall, they're one of those bigger ones, and I think a lot of the Chinese teams have many roster moves to come as well. Fortnite, 100 Thieves has parted ways with Kenneth, Blind, and Sir Demetrius, I believe is how it's pronounced. Blind, for many of us who know, it was the player that beat Ninja and a few other pros out at the original Fortnite competitive events. This, to me, with three players moving out, do you see 100 Thieves taking a new direction with Fortnite? Do you see them dropping out of the scene completely? Do you think they're just shifting up the rosters? What are your thoughts on this?
I think they're going to be dropping out completely. Just a gut feeling. There's really nothing to back that up. But when you take a look at Nadeshot and some of the other things 100 Thieves are doing, kind of refocusing their brand to that lifestyle brand, focusing on not Call of Duty anymore, but jumping into the CSGO scene, kind of, you know, in Nadeshot's own words here, being the startup that they are, kind of making sure that what they invest in has long-term payout, has that return on investment. Right now, Fortnite, the developer, really doesn't care about the esports scene. There is no league, and we make an argument here all the time that you really can't have a league for Fortnite or any kind of battle royale game. The structure just doesn't make sense. And, you know, it's just, you can't rely so much on these random tournaments that pop up for these amazing prize pools that are just, it's just too sporadic, too chaotic for an organization to really sit there and say, hey, look, I'm willing to pump hundreds and thousands, if not millions of dollars into this team to get the best players, to get the best training, to get them to all the tournaments. And there's not really a steady, reliable return on investment here. That's the biggest struggle with Fortnite right now and their professional esports scene is there is no stability, really. It's just kind of, next week, here a $3 million tournament's going to pop up. Then we'll go 3 weeks without hearing anything, and then a $5 million tournament pops up. it's just too sporadic for me. And I feel like a lot of organizations have realized that, and they're starting to kind of pull out. Especially, you can't even really advertise the fact that you're with an organization when you're playing Fortnite on these competitive scenes.
Right. More than anything, you're signing pro players, but they're almost like streamers more than anything. You're buying people for their streaming name. It feels like a lot of the players being signed are the popular players that make it as streamers. So you get some players that have a good shot at winning, but your big real income throughout, if they don't win the tournament, is from those streaming rights. That, to me, is the big question mark with Fortnite. There's no real full branding as far as franchising around it. There's no jersey wearing to a degree. Like, certain events allow jerseys, but overall, it doesn't feel like Fortnite and Epic are really capitalizing on the organization side of esports. So with all of that being said, I think the big question mark with Fortnite is pretty much what you hit on, John. Where is the future for it? Where is the future funding? Where can these organizations really find stability in it outside of these crazy prize pools if they get lucky enough to win? So I think 100 Thieves will stick around for now, but it looks like they are definitely making major adjustments to the rosters. 100 Thieves has also added Papa Smithy as their new League of Legends general manager. He was previously a caster for the LCK for close to 5 years, and he's one of the most respected analysts in the scene for League of Legends. I like this move overall. I think Papa Smithy brings a lot to the table, not only as an analyst, but as an industry insider in particular. He has the relationships already. He knows a ton of the players. He knows how the scene works. This, to me, is a really, really strong move.
Yeah, I absolutely love the move. I think it's super strong. I think there's really, when you take a look for someone who understands a game, who understands the mechanics of the game, the macro play style of the game, just all the different elements that go into a game, you take a look at analysts, casters, people who have been around the game, who have immersed themselves into the game as well, that really, They live and breathe the game. I mean, there's really no one better. And the interesting thing here is if you pay attention to these casters on Twitter, Monte Cristo came out talking about this move, and he agrees this move is absolutely great. I think this move is absolutely great as well. I think it's a great move for Papa Smith. I think it's great for 100 Thieves. But I think this highlights an area of concern for casters. What is the next level for these casters who've been in the game for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, who started in their teens, worked their way through their 20s, they're in their late 20s, early 30s now, what's the next step for these casters? Are they going to be, is the next step from casting going into the developmental side of the game where they get hired on by the creator of the game and they help, produce the game? Do they go to the organizational route? If they go to the organizational route, does the game overall lose out on a person who really understands the game? I feel like while it's a great move, it also highlights an area of concern, being what is the top echelon of being a shoutcaster? Is it being recognized as a caster, then jumping to an organization and building an organization up? Is it jumping to a developer and building the game that you know so well up? What is the next step there? So it's an interesting question that Monte Cristo brings up here. But overall, it's a great move for Papa Smithy again and 100 Threes.
Right. And it's a great question, but at the same point, I don't think it's one that it really needs to be asked just yet. I feel like the biggest move for casters is you can go back into the scene, not as a player, obviously, but you can continue on the casting route, ask for raises here and there as you get really more popular in a sense. Like, someone like Monte Cristo has a lot more range to argue for a raise in his field. He knows the game so well. He's very popular. He has a huge following. At the same point, we're also seeing people like Deficio, like Papa Smithy, move from casting into team operations. I think this is another big pathway as well. It could be general esports operations. It could be esports operations for the title that you casted in. That's what we see with Deficio. That's what we see here with Papa Smithy. I think that's viable as well. On top of that, I think something, and I think this is where Monty was really trying to hit at, is if they were a caster with Riot Games for League of Legends or Blizzard for Overwatch, why not open up some kind of developmental positions within the organization? That's the part I feel like we're currently lacking in. I feel like there's not a ton of availability in those fields, but at the same point, I could see them developing over time as these scenes mature, as esports in general mature. So I'm honestly not too worried just yet. Anything else on that, John?
No, I just like shouting out Monte Cristo whenever I can.
Yeah, he's great. I have to agree. I mean, he He can come off as a jerk to a lot of people sometimes, but he definitely has some great points. He doesn't always go about mentioning them to people the right way, in a sense. Starting storms on Twitter cannot really end up with positive approaches in some aspects, but overall, I feel like he really does bring some great ideas to the table. FIFA Astralis has launched a FIFA team under brand new brand Future FC, and they have signed Usan as their first player and Audi as their first official sponsor. Astralis, John, is one of the greatest known organizations in EU right now. It is absolutely killing it in the CS scene. Now jumping into FIFA with this new brand, I really, really like this move, and I love that they already have Audi on board.
Yeah, it's a great deal. Audi is already in the football slash soccer scene in traditional ways. Now Audi is still making their move into the esports scene. I think it's absolutely great. Astralis launching a FIFA team is even better. There's really nothing bad about one launching a FIFA team with it being such a global game. It has massive outreach all over the world. But now you're also pulling in like high quality sponsors like Audi into this. So it's a great move for Astralis. I think it's a great move for their FIFA team. And Audi, I mean, come on. If Audi does the same deal they do with their professional soccer teams they sponsor, these guys are all getting a free Audi that they can ride around, and that is freaking awesome.
So what are your thoughts on Future FC? I don't know 100% what the rules around this FIFA scene that they're jumping into are going to be or is currently, but what do you think about Future FC being the team name as opposed to Astralis?
It's definitely, I mean... Australia is it's definitely the more known name. I don't know. It's weird because you're essentially sacrificing an already built brand. Again, brand recognition is almost everything when it comes to like esports, traditional sports, just any kind of marketing in general. It's one of those things where. If you're going to make the change, you do it at the beginning, that's fine, but you still need to somehow make that connection with your parent company. It's kind of like what we see in Overwatch League. They can't use, like, Cloud9, for example, can't call the London Spitfire Cloud9. They have to use London Spitfire. But that's also, it's a regionally based league, if you will, versus this, where FIFA is more kind of wide open, you just enter into tournaments and you go with it. I think they lose a lot by not keeping their name, but I don't think it hurts them in the end. I think they're able to find a way to tie it together.
Yeah, I'm kind of around that same range. To be honest, I feel like the FIFA scene has traditionally been around soccer team names. So like Roma FC has a particular team named after the same name as the club. So I think that might be why we see the Future FC rule here. Again, it doesn't really attach to a club. At least I don't know of a club named Future. But at the same point, I'm thinking that's why we see the rebranding at the same point. Moving on, Gears 5. NRG has entered the new esports scene with a powerhouse team that includes Thy Ashes, Summons, Praised, Mental, Solars, and Explosive. I think this is a great move. You're bringing on a lot of Gears veterans. Again, I feel like a lot of these roster moves in particular this week are very strong moves. The Gears scene being up and coming. I love the fact that we see NRG jumping back into esports. They have some teams here and there. I believe Rocket League, they're still in. But we've seen them fall off in a number of scenes. League of Legends being one of the bigger ones that they've fallen off on. CSGO, they haven't really been performing that great in either. Now we see them jumping into a new scene. Not necessarily completely new, but a newly developed scene in this new Gears look. I think this is a great move for NRG to not only revitalize themselves to bring their image back, but they're doing it with a lot of veterans on their side as well. Partnerships. Ninja's partnership with Mixer / Microsoft continues to evolve. We expected this to be a big deal come Halo time next year, but it's actually moving forward a little quicker, this time with Gears of War 5. Ninja was given the rights to bring his viewers the first ever Gears 5 campaign playthrough. He did stop short of finishing the game to avoid endgame spoilers, though. That, John, I'm curious if it was planned or not. I could see the coalition, the makers of Gears, saying, hey, Ninja, you can play through the whole thing, but stop just short of the ending so that everyone else feels the need to play through the game to see what that ending is like. So I don't know if that was planned or if that was just Ninja being like, hey, guys, I'm a gamer. I don't want to spoil this for people who are just watching the stream. So I can see that going either way. I don't know where he stopped. I jumped in here and there. I think I stopped watching around the middle of Act 2. From jumping in different intervals. So I don't know how far he went, but I do know he did not go all the way through Act 4.
It's smart. Because if you spoil it, people aren't going to want to play the game. This way, you in short, people still have that question mark, like what's going to happen at the end of this game? So I still want to play through the campaign. I just don't want to play it for, you know, the multiplayer online aspect of it. These game companies develop these games to be, you know, have multiple layers to them. They want you to play the story that they work so hard on. They want you to play multiplayer. They want you to get attached to the story, to the characters, and have that bond. I mean, we see how powerful Overwatch has done with very little lore, how people connect to these characters and are able to identify with their background, their stories, their struggles and everything, and what that can do to a community. So when you give a teaser like that, where you have a popular name like Ninja streaming your campaign mode, if you play all the way through it, you blow it, especially because the game's not fully released to everyone yet. He played it during essentially, you know, the early release phase for those who pre-ordered. And, you know, I'm kind of curious to see the numbers, but from talking around people that I know, people don't like pre-ordering anymore. They don't like the idea of getting an incomplete game. They'd rather wait, you know, 2 or 3 weeks after the game's been out, let the bugs get worked out, let some of the early expansions come out, you know, make it feel like a more complete game instead of paying full price for roughly a 60% completed game. Not saying that's Gears 5, but that's just the way the industry has kind of trended in the past 5 years. So there's a lot of question marks that, you know, it's going into this. So I applaud Ninja for stopping short, and it's a great marketing tactic for Gears to try to make sure people play their campaign mode.
Right, and we don't know if this was organized that way. I just have a feeling from a strategic standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, it makes so much sense to make him make this move. At the same point, from what he played, Ninja seemed to enjoy it. It could obviously just be him acting, but the campaign is getting really, really good reviews. Ninja seemed to have a great time. I believe he actually shedded real tears during the campaign from little bits I saw. Again, he's a great actor, so you never know. But Gears really does find a way to touch those emotional points at certain points. Gears 2 and Gears 3 definitely had those crying moments. But Gears 5 supposedly is supposed to be very, very deep.
Now, is it up there with Life is Strange crying moments?
Gears 4's ending was quite emotional, and I believe it was Gears 2 or 3 had a really good point where I would say is up there, yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. Different things hit people differently, but I feel like any kind of emotional death or any kind of loss can really hit people in certain ways depending on who that person is, but yeah, Gears can definitely hit at some heartstrings or tug at them a bit here and there. In addition to that, the Coalition is also partnered up with WWE wrestler Batista. John, I'm sure you keep up with the WWE nowadays. They're going to release a playable model of him in Gears 5 starting September 15th after the WWE Clash of Champions. I hate to say it, but I have not watched WWE in at least a decade. At the same point, looking at the character model, looking at Batista, and I believe this is also rumored that he might be playing one of the Gears of War characters come the Gears of War movie releasing in the next few years. So this could be their way of teasing him and saying, hey, like, let's welcome him to the Gears community. At the same point, this also could just be because he looks like a burly, muscular Gears type of guy.
So it's funny you say that because I don't watch wrestling that much anymore, but I do know Dave Bautista. He is a Washingtonian, sir. He is from right here in the DMV.
Is he really?
He is. And he is also from, you know, a small film. Like indie, like almost no one knows of it, called Guardians of the Galaxy.
I knew that one was coming.
he plays Drax. He's kind of a big deal, especially if you're from the DC area. I was at a Nats game, actually, and he was there as a guest. And I was like, I have to find a way to run into this guy. And it was right before Endgame came out. Super, super cool guy. I love the fact that he's getting involved with like the nerdier side of the world. You know, granted, he is in wrestling, which is pretty nerdy. There's a lot of crossover between gamers, nerds, and wrestling fans. So it's really cool. And I think he's a perfect fit for Gears 5 as a character model, as a voice, as just a personality. I can't wait for him to come out in Gears 5. That's going to be absolutely outstanding.
I mean, he looks like a straight-up Gears character. Like, if you were to cut someone from the game into real life, I feel like Batista is about as close as you can get. So I'm really excited. I think this is a great release. I think we're going to see more of this with Gears as well, John. With the new character releases coming out, I think we'll get some of the classics, your Cole, your Baird, a lot of those characters that people and players look back to for years of the earlier series, that original trilogy, and some of the new characters from 4 and 5 as well. In addition to that, I think we're going to get more partnerships like this. Maybe not WWE, but I would not be surprised to see more characters in this trend. We have Terminator in there. We have Halo characters in there. maybe some other Xbox games. I don't think we'll see Banjo-Kazooie in there, but I would not be awesome. Surprised.
I want to see Banjo-Kazooie in Gears 5 so bad now. You have no idea how awesome I think that would be.
I think we'll get something like a Destiny character or like a Call of Duty character or something along those lines. I wouldn't be surprised to see. But something around the Nintendo Edge, that Banjo-Kazooie, the Mario, I think that might be taking things a bit too far.
I want a buff, like, shirt, like, half-torn, blood all over his overalls Luigi, like, carrying a minigun, like, in Horde mode, just, like, with that thick, like, Luigi accent that he has from, like, the Mario games in there, and just, like, absolutely mowing down the locust and everything. I think that would be absolutely fantastic, and I will pay however much money I need for that DLC content to have a jacked Luigi covered in blood in Gears 5.
Or a mad Dr. Mario. Yeah, I mean, it would... I don't see traditional Gears fans really going for that one personally.
Come on.
That would be a great mod, though. I have to agree with Chad on that one.
Yoshi taking a chainsaw to the locust on Horde mode, like, that would be absolutely great.
Too extra, too much. Sticking with Xbox, head of Xbox Phil Spencer and Bungie CEO have teamed up to play some Destiny on Mixer at 3 p.m. Pacific time on September 10th. That is tomorrow for those of you watching us live. They will have surprises and giveaways for those in chat. The big thing here, John, that I kind of want to dive into a bit is we saw Bungie and Xbox. They were buddy-buddy back in the Halo days. Bungie obviously making the original Halo series, the original trilogy of Halo games. Now we've seen Bungie move on. They've gone the Destiny route. They partnered up with Activision. They are now free of Activision's grasp. Where do you see this relationship between Bungie and Microsoft going? Do you think we'll ever see Bungie move back into making exclusives for Microsoft? Do you think Bungie has learned their lesson, is going to stay away from big corporations and continue to be their own independent studio? What are you seeing as the future between these two powerhouses?
I think they learned to stay away from Activision, which is probably the biggest lesson anyone can learn. God, Activision is just destroying everything they touch, it feels like. I feel like they're going to stay independent for a while. I don't think they're going to commit to anything long term. It wouldn't surprise me, given their relationship with Microsoft in the past, if they do go exclusive, Xbox games in the future. It wouldn't surprise me at all. But I don't know. It's just pure speculation. I feel like for at least the next 5 years, they'll probably stay as an independent developer doing their own thing. You know, if they make exclusives, great. If they make multi-platform games, great. But I don't see them immediately signing with another large corporation going forward, especially after their experience with Activision.
Yeah, I'm right around that same trail. I think they stay independent. What I could see this developing into is possibly timed exclusives going to Microsoft, or maybe we even see stuff getting released in Game Pass shortly after launch or at launch. Destiny 3, if that ever comes out, if they put that on Game Pass, that would be kind of cool. At the same point, I don't know if a trilogy type of game would really make it that well in Game Pass. I feel like maybe a new release, if they go a different route outside of Destiny, then maybe that releases on Game Pass. But it is a good sign seeing both the heads together once again. G2 Esports and Red Bull have announced a multi-year deal that will include content creation and event activities. In addition to that, newly branded jerseys will be debuted and did debut at the LEC Finals this past weekend, and they will be at the Berlin Major as well. Jerseys look great. I mean, it's very similar to Cloud9. It's got the Red Bull up on the shoulder. Red Bull is a great sponsor, especially when it comes to esports. So many players out there drinking energy drinks, whether it be Monster, Rockstar, Red Bull, they're all out there. I mean, it's definitely a big thing among gamers. Putting in an esports just makes sense. Red Bull, a great move here, partnering up with a powerhouse in G2.
Yeah, it's a great move. And I love that when the announcement came out, the entire Red Bull sponsored esport family came out to greet them. There's this hysterical chain of tweets that kind of just followed along with all the Red Bull sponsored organizations, including one from Cloud9 of Niski in essentially what looks like a Red Bull summoning circle with a Red Bull balancing on the top of his head. Very peaceful, very frightening at the same time. But it's great. And Joey, you said it. Red Bull is one of those iconic sponsors in esports and really anything alternative to the mainstream of traditional sports. You know, they do X sports, they do extreme sports, they do Just everything outside the box, motocross, they do esports. It's everything that traditional sponsors kind of shy away from because, you know, maybe they don't have the same numbers that the NBA or the NHL or the NFL or Major League Baseball have. But they believe in esports. They believe in gaming. And it just kind of has that hand-in-hand bond there with gaming, energy drinks and gaming. It just kind of works. It's a stereotype among gamers, but it's also not necessarily, you know, in the terms of stereotypes, it's not necessarily a bad one. There are some other worse stereotypes out there, I think, but I think it's great. I think Red Bull is one of those positive sponsors out there, and I think it's kind of like that badge of honor for an esport organization to have Red Bull, you know, come to you and say, hey, yeah, we want to go ahead and do this. We want to sponsor your organization. It's something that stands out globally, all over the world. That Red Bull logo right there on that collar. It looks great. Congrats to you too. That's a heck of a sponsorship.
Right. And like you said, it's a global brand. Not only that, Sean, but I love the fact that Red Bull is buying in early to these esports competitions and these teams. They continue to sponsor up-and-coming organizations. Obviously, G2 has been up-and-coming, and now they've already come. They've made it. They've been LEC champions for, I believe, 6 splits now. So they're up there. They've done really well in League of Legends. They've made their name in CSGO as well. They've done really well in Rocket League. They're an organization that touches a lot of different scenes, and they're one of the biggest powerhouses in EU. So it's a great move by Red Bull. On top of that, when it comes around and all these other big organizations continue to buy in, these ones that have already bought into traditional sports, Red Bull can pull the card. Hey, we've been around this whole time. We already are integrated into esports in so many different ways that some of these traditional sports organizations can't really pull that card. Absolutely love it. Puma inks a 2-year sponsorship of Oceanic Team Order. This follows Puma's first foray into esports earlier this year. I believe it was in January, where they signed a short-term sponsorship deal with Cloud9's League of Legends team. I love the fact that we see them jumping back into esports. That means something went well with Cloud9. They enjoyed their sponsorship there. They got some kind of return. At the same point, they are taking it overseas, and I think they're making a very, very good move doing this. They're going to Oceania. This is a region that's very much up and coming in esports, much like Southeast Asia. It's an area that hasn't quite had it in certain areas. Like, you look at Malaysia, that's a very up and coming. Singapore, another one. Australia is huge for esports. It's not there yet. It's not the biggest region, but it's one that's going to be up and coming. And the fact that they're getting in on the ground level, I think, is going to be really, really, really big for Puma.
Yeah, it's great for Puma. Puma's always played kind of second fiddle to Adidas, you know, internationally, just everywhere. This kind of, you know, when you think of that kind of sport branding of clothing, something that is mainly soccer or running themed, you know, if you think Adidas or Puma first, you're going to think Adidas. Puma really trying to grow into this area. I think it's a smart move going into, you know, the Oceania region, a region that really is, I would argue, in comparison to some of the Western teams, kind of lacking in terms of sponsorship. So I think it's great for Puma to really think outside the box and really take the first step at kind of locking down an entire region, bringing their quality of product to esport teams in the Oceania region. So it's a smart move for them, and they have the backing of, you know, we're not backing, but they have the proof of their success with a major organization like Cloud9. So it's a win-win for Puma. And really, it's a win-win for esports in the Oceania region, because now it's going to bring more money into that region, and they can grow even larger and expand their outreach and their player pool with these kinds of sponsorships. So it's really great for both parties involved, but really good for Puma, really trying to tighten up their influence in esports.
Right, and if you're looking at places to expand, Oceania has got to be toward the top of your list. I think Japan is another one that's really good right now. They're open to esports. They've made actually like political changes to allow esports in and allow those visas easier to get. And then on top of that, you look at the Philippines as well. If you're looking at expanding as far as apparel sponsor goes, I think those are the three regions to really look at right now. Oceania is going to be a very big move for Puma down the line. It looks good now, but it's going to look really, really great, just like stock market. You're investing in something early. As that region grows, as that region gets more acclaim, it's just going to end up paying off tenfold. TESPA has announced Coca-Cola as their official beverage partner. Not a huge surprise here, John. Coca-Cola has sponsored a number of different tournaments before. TESPA really jumping in with League of Legends as one of its major events and major titles. Coca-Cola known for sponsoring League of Legends major events. I think it just fits very well hand in hand here with TESPA and Coca-Cola working together. You're going to see all different things throughout the year with this exclusive beverage move. There's going to be loot drops to final care packages, putting together special collections of Coke-themed benefits for the chapter and members of that. With that being said, TESPA is one of those organizations working toward the health of gamers and esport players. I don't know if Coca-Cola quite fits that motto just as cleanly.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't even make an argument that Diet Coke or Coke Zero really fits that too, because there's still health concerns with those drinks. That's coming from an avid Coke Zero drinker too, Joey. It's kind of odd. You know, if you're going to focus on the health of gamers and esport athletes and everything, it's just kind of one of those things that's like, you know, wouldn't you want to put down the soda for water, Gatorade, a non-sugary beverage that's going to like drive your vitals up to like ungodly levels, that's going to make your doctor scream the next time you go in for a physical. But also, you know, Coca-Cola is another one of those iconic, you know, companies. It's a logo that's known worldwide. You know, that font that they use for their logo, anywhere in the world, you know, they know what that is. They have that kind of grasp. Now, whether they're going to force players to drink it, that's neither here nor there. But I do agree with you, Joey. I think it's kind of weird that, you know, if TESPA is going to sit here and go, well, hey, you know, we're looking for out, you know, the health and safety of our gamers. It's kind of weird having a partnership like this. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it probably outweighs the negatives here, the kind of money that Coca-Cola will bring in this deal. So it's a good move. But yeah, it's just kind of ironic.
I don't know who all Coca-Cola owns either, if they own an energy drink or if
Monster,
they own something like vitamin water or something like that. I mean, I feel like most of the major ones own some type of water distributor, if I remember correctly. I want to say Pepsi's like with Aquafina. Coca-Cola might be with Dasani, if I remember correctly. Maybe that's what we see. Maybe we see them go the Dasani route for players. Obviously, players are still going to drink soda. It's a common thing nowadays, especially in America. At the same point, as this progresses as more of a health trend for certain esport players, I hope we do see them go at least the water route, at least something mixed in there, so we don't just see sugary beverages in kids' hands when they're presenting this on the larger stage as far as economics go.
I'm trying to read the back of my Monster can I have sitting here on my desk real quick.
I'm pretty sure they own Dasani, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, this is the Ultra Paradise version, the green Monster Zero.
Ultra Paradise.
No sugar, but probably unhealthy amounts of B12, B6, and a bunch of other things that may or may not be bad for you.
Okay, we Gucci here. But we're okay. We got, it looks like vitamin water, smart water, Dasani, and Honest Tea, and Simply Orange for those that like orange juice with a little bit of sugar. Maybe Powerade as well. It looks like they do own quite a bit. So this could be healthy. You throw the Coca-Cola logo up there because it's most well-known, but then maybe have those esports kids, those kids that are training, drink some water and stuff here and there. So some promising things here. I feel a little bit more comfortable with this deal after that on the show research. We're doing it live. SK Telecom and Microsoft announced plans for joint 5G-based cloud gaming. SK Telecom will be an exclusive operating partner of Microsoft's cloud gaming service in South Korea, with a preview of Project X Cloud planned and scheduled to roll out in October. What are your thoughts on this one, John?
Yeah, it's great. 5G is kind of one of those things that's been like a meme for the past several years, talking about, you know, what can come after 4G. 4G is so great. Is 5G even capable? And, you know, do we believe 5G really is something as legitimate as what 4K is? Like, there is legitimate data going from 3G to 4G. You know, is there going to be a massive jump in 4G to 5G, or is it just going to be more the companies throttling less on your 4G plan? There's question marks around that, but I have no reason to believe that this is more of a gimmick than anything else. I do think it's a legitimate deal here for a 5G-based cloud gaming plan here between SK and Microsoft. I think it's a great deal. Microsoft really reaching out into the Asian markets, which really have been dominated by Sony for the longest of time. You know, Xbox really having a grasp in North America, and you can make an argument for Europe too. But really, the Asian markets, Sony has really locked everything down there. So it's really great to see Microsoft kind of expand a little bit more there.
You've hit the nail on the head, sir. Uh-oh. This deal is huge. I have to say this is a giant deal, and it's mainly because of the reasons you mentioned, John. When you look at Microsoft, they have completely been dominated by Sony and PlayStation in Asia, just like you said. This is not only a move to move there as far as cloud-based gaming, but it's a move to get more footing in the Asian market. You look at Xbox. That's one way you could potentially expand over in Asia. But really, the bigger move for me is PC. You look at Asia, and they are such a PC-driven market, especially in China, South Korea, that general area of Asia. This is a huge move to move into the esports capital of Asia, really, in South Korea. Now you're moving in with one of the biggest possible partners in SK Telecom. So you're going to have a great infrastructure and a great partner over there, and you're going to get to know the Asian culture as far as gaming. This is going to be a giant move for years to come. Microsoft already looking like a powerhouse in cloud gaming. They've even had Sony and Nintendo request a partner with them for the Azure services for cloud gaming. And now you're jumping into that market as well. I think this is going to be a huge, huge deal for Microsoft as far as gaming goes. So I'm excited. I think this is going to be a giant monumental deal. I would even argue to say this might be the biggest deal we see in gaming all year long. Other news, ESL and DreamHack, this is a big one too. They are set to launch a $5 million CSGO open circuit in 2020. It will be called the ESL Pro Tour and will be built towards two grand championships each year. The tour will include two levels, a challenger level and a masters level. John, this is something we've wanted for so long. We love CSGO. We love the fact that it's been around. It's been a solid esports scene, much like League of Legends, CSGO being around even longer. But it's constantly been tournaments. It's been, here's a big major tournament in June, and here's a big major tournament in July. And it's all been driven up by big major tournaments. Now we finally see a lot of those tournaments coming together and becoming a season-long format. This is going to allow people to invest in CSGO and into the team so much more. I think this is going to bring CSGO to a whole new level as far as esports goes.
Yeah, and it's also allowing a pathway for younger players to get that recognition, to get that fame, so they may be able to take that next step in their esport career too. Really exciting stuff as we're seeing a lot more leagues take this route too, allowing an amateur pathway to pro, if you will, built in to a league structure or into a tournament structure that eventually helps replace some of these players. Some of these players that are, for lack of any other better terms, getting too old, and that's completely irrelevant when it comes to gaming, but gets on that older echelon of the esport tier, so we're not just recycling the same, let's say, 50 players just on different teams constantly. Way to get new, fresh blood into the scene. And that's really how a scene survives and grows, is you have to be able to replace it with fresh blood, fresh players in the scene. And leagues and games are starting to realize that there needs to be a pathway to pro for these young amateur gamers to try to find their way into that upper echelon.
Right, and we just saw that with Gears of War and the way they formatted their new scene, CSGO readapting that same kind of model, League of Legends forcing Academy teams now too, Overwatch League doing the same thing. It almost makes sense. Before, we saw certain organizations buy Academy teams when they could afford it. Now it's saying, hey, we need to see structure. We need to see, if you're going to franchise in our league, we need to see that you're willing to invest in it as well beyond that initial payment. I love this fact. I think it's going to be great for up-and-coming talent. I think it's also promising for parents as well. When they have a son or daughter that's looking to go into esports, now they can say, hey, there is a legitimate pathway for me to go from high school esports to college esports to making my way into the pro scene. I think that is going to be a very, very big factor coming the next 5 years down the road. Additionally, the challengers will include teams that attend DreamHack Open events, the ESEA MDL and the ESL National Championships. These minor tournaments will serve as a platform for teams to reach the major tournaments, which will give each at least $250,000 in prizes. The tournaments will include ESL 1, IEM, and DreamHack Masters events, as well as the ESL Pro League itself. By competing in these tournaments, the teams will gain points in a ranking similar to what we already see in CSGO, and the best will earn spots at the two Masters Championship finals. So similar to a playoff format like we see with Overwatch League, you earn points if you have enough points. You make your way directly into the tournament or potentially into a play-in phase to make your way into the main tournament field. I think this is a great move, John, and I really think this is the new move that we need to see CSGO. It has a great scene, but how can we accelerate that scene? How can we bring in more talent? This is a great way to do that. So we'll be keeping an eye on that one. Again, $5 million is no short prize pool in addition to all of these other tournaments and prize pools that will be coming into that major event as well. So I'm excited to follow that. I think that'll make CSGO a lot easier to follow as someone doing a regular podcast as well as just a viewer. I love Fnatic's CSGO team. I love watching teams like Astralis and Team Liquid completely dominate, and I think it's going to be a lot easier seeing that in a big, big major format to be able to follow. A Nintendo Direct happened on September 4th, and we have a ton of news, all of which we will not have time to go over tonight because we will be here over past midnight and we have to wake up for work the next day. So check out that Nintendo Direct on your own, but we'll hit a few major details. Overwatch is headed to the Nintendo Switch. John, if you had a Switch, would you be picking up Overwatch on the Nintendo Switch when it launches on October 15th?
Do I have to pay for it?
I believe so.
No.
I don't think I would either, and part of the reason being, I can't imagine being able to control people as well on a Switch. When I look at games on Switch, I think platformers are really good. I think stuff like Pokemon, stuff like Metroid, different platform-style games work really well. Breath of the Wild did a good job as well as an RP type of game. But when you look at something like an Overwatch, I can't imagine playing competitive Overwatch on a Switch. I feel like I would be so discombobulated. I can't even speak. I'm so crazy on that one. But I feel like I would be trying to aim, and the analog sticks are so far away, and they're not ergonomic for something like that. It sounds like a massacre to me.
Yeah, it just, the idea, I'm a firm believer that certain games are not meant to be portable. They're not meant to be held in your hand. And I will always stand by that. By pushing Overwatch onto the Switch, do you open it up to a new gamer base? Yes, you do. But at what cost? How much are you going to have to water down this game? How much, you know, specs that you have worked for over a decade, Blizzard, to build this new title for the PC, for consoles to perform at the best level possible, you're now, in essence, trying to fit that into a tiny screen when it's meant to be played on a larger screen, when it's meant to be played on a television, when it's meant to be played on something that will show that hard work, that dedication that you put over 10 years into developing this game. Don't shrink it down. Don't water it down. Don't take something great and force it onto a console that it may not have the same kind of awe that it has on the PC or on, you know, an Xbox or a PlayStation. It just, I don't like it when developers do this. It's not meant to be on a handheld. If you want to build a game for the handheld, build it specifically for a handheld device. Like, no one is arguing for, you know, a Switch-only game to be put on PC. No one's arguing for a Switch-only game to be put on Xbox or PlayStation. They're made for the Switch. They're made for that style of gamer. I don't see competitive Overwatch players wanting to play competitive Overwatch on a Switch. And God forbid, you're like, what if, Joey, hypothetically speaking, I don't know if it's true or not, let's say they do the old school split screen multiplayer and everyone can have one Joy-Con in their hand. Can you imagine trying to play that game with one Joy-Con? And I don't think they're actually going to do that.
There's no way that would be possible.
You know, yeah, but you know, but the thing is, it's like, that's one of the things that's so versatile about the Switch. You know, maybe not the new cheaper version of the Switch, because I don't believe you can take the Joy-Cons off, but you can do multiplayer on the Switch with each having one of the two Joy-Cons. That's something that the Switch is great for. Putting Overwatch on, I feel like you're going to water down this game, and it's really going to hamper down the experience. So, no, even if I had a Switch, I still don't have a Switch. I'm still not looking to buy Overwatch. I would rather any day of the week play it on PC or console over the Switch.
Right, and it'll sell copies. Games always sell. At the same point, I don't think it's going to sell that great. I like you said, John, I don't think the Switch is the greatest platform for Overwatch. If they want to make a platformer version of Overwatch, then yeah, maybe I'd buy it. If they want to expand on the lore with a different type of story mode type of game for Overwatch in a Switch type of version. Again, I feel like platformers are really what excel on that platform. But when I look at it overall, I do not like the idea of playing an FPS on the Switch, especially in a competitive environment. It sounds dirty to me. It sounds like I would get completely annihilated. It would be so tough with the ergonomic positioning that's not quite there with the Switch for something like a competitive game like that. Even if you buy the attachable controllers, yeah, it gets a little bit better. Maybe that's the way to go. But then at the same point, why not just buy a PlayStation or Xbox? Yeah, you can argue there's more funding here and there. But why did you buy the Switch originally? Did you buy it for FPS games? I guarantee most people are going to say no, and that to me is why I don't really see it being the greatest addition to the Switch. At the same point, as a gamer, I'm not going to argue about more games being available on more platforms, but it's not for me personally. One that is for me, though, is Banjo-Kazooie. Heyo. Good friend Banjo-Kazooie, formerly Nintendo with Rare, now with Xbox under that same Rare studio. He has been landing, or they have been landing, in Super Smash Brothers. They actually landed this past week with the Nintendo Direct. I think this is going to be a really exciting move. I think it's going to be very cool to see how Banjo-Kazooie plays into the atmosphere. John, if you look at any character to add it into Super Smash Brothers, I feel like Banjo-Kazooie is almost the perfect fit.
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic. There's a great history with Banjo-Kazooie with video gamers. A lot of us, current ancient esport people, if you will, over the age of 25, if you will, they grew up with Banjo-Kazooie. Now you can have Banjo-Kazooie in Smash. I think it's absolutely great. It's a DLC that a lot of people have been wanting, so good for them.
And in addition to that, they have confirmed the next character. It's going to be Fatal Fury's Terry Bogard heading to Smash for the next DLC. And there's a rumor that the character behind that will be Sora from Kingdom Hearts. Again, not confirmed, but Sora is another one I'd really love to see in-game. And like I said, there's a whole bunch more. The announcement went on for quite a while. There's a lot of different talk. If you want to end up with more debt with a good old raccoon of ours, Tom Nook, you can do so in Animal Crossing with more updates on that, as well as new stuff on many, many different games, including Pokemon Sword and Shield. Check out the rest of those announcements. Can't fit them in the show today, but we'll hope to hit some of them again next week. PlayStation has started an internet war by calling DualShock's X button a cross. Ladies and gentlemen, it is now official. Sony has commented. It is not an X. That is actually a cross on the PlayStation DualShock controller.
Was this a press release by chance? Here we go. Sony again trying to reinvent the wheel and call it something completely different. Sony, it's an X button. You've called it an X button for decades. It is not a cross. It is an X. I am sick and tired of the petty BS coming from Sony. This is so stupid. It is an X button. It's an X button. It's an X button. I don't care if Microsoft calls it an Xbox, if it's an Xbox 360, if they want to rebrand it and call it a Z box. I don't care. It's still an X button, Sony. You don't get to make anything special here. It is an X button. You don't just get to erase 30 years of gaming because you're in a hissy fit with Microsoft. It is an X button. I'm going to leave it there because we're running short on time. Sony, I love you, but I hate you.
Okay, but I do want to say, if we look at it all, it does make sense. I mean, you have a triangle, you have a circle, and you have a square. Where would an X fit into that? Why wouldn't you call the circle an O? So overall, I think this is probably the way it was intended throughout the whole time. But when you look at the translation, at least over here in North America, we have definitely taken it as an X the whole time. I think I still call the circle one a circle, though. Do you?
I still call it circle, yeah.
Yeah, I call it circle. So I guess we've just been wrong this whole time.
No. Sony could have put this to bed decades ago if in the instruction manual they didn't refer to it as X and they actually wrote out the word cross. I don't know anyone that calls it a cross button. No one. First off, when I think cross, I think of something that's like a T, like an upright T.
Like a Christian cross, right.
Like a Christian cross or like the cross that you have on first-person shooters where it is like that, You know, sometimes you have your X's, sometimes you have your circle, sometimes you have whatever you want to change it to, but it's still an X. It's not a cross. Straighten it up if you want it to be a cross, but I'm sorry, that's going to look weird on a video game controller. And it's an X, Sony. Just get used to it. You're not going to win this one. But thank you again for inventing cross-platform while you're at it.
So someone also ran measurements. Again, we're running out of time on this, but someone ran measurements as far as what the measurements of an actual cross symbol are compared to the measurements of what an X are. And because it's equal in value, supposedly it is a cross based on that tweet for whatever you want to put into it. I just think this is a fun little heated battle that we're just going to have to continue bringing up for our good old Sony fans here.
This is so stupid.
Moving on to Overwatch League, we are deep in the middle of playoffs. Sean, how are those playoffs going?
I'm still fed up over this whole cross and X thing. Overwatch, we're coming down to the home stretch. We are looking for two more teams to enter into the semifinals. Joey, the finals are just right around the corner. It is so close. I can taste it. Joey, this Thursday, September 12th, we have the Atlanta Reign taking on the Shock. That's 7 p.m. Eastern time, followed by the LA Gladiators taking on the San Francisco Shock. The Shock had an amazing performance this past weekend, now looking to punch their ticket from the quarterfinals into the semifinals here. Then, Joey, on Friday the 13th, oh, bad luck, New York Excelsior taking on the Vancouver Titans at 7 p.m. Eastern time as well. Some great matchups. Again, a Cinderella story here in the Atlanta Reign, really struggling most of the season, then coming through strong late in stage three and really wrecking it in stage four, earning their place in the playoffs. Now here they are, just essentially 2 weeks away from potentially playing in Philadelphia for the finals.
So, John, we got straight up wrecked last week in our predictions. We did not do well at all.
That's why I skipped
Let's try to redeem ourselves this week. Atlanta Reign or Hangzhou Spark?
You know what? I'm going to ride the Reign. I think the Reign are going to do it. They're playing out of their mind. They're playing amazing. I'm going to take them.
Like the Phoenix that they are symboled after, I think they do rise from the ashes this week after a tough loss last week. I do think they take down the Spark, being one of the hottest teams in Stage 4. Atlanta Reign rolls on. Los Angeles Gladiators, San Francisco Shock.
Sinatra on Doomfist was absolutely disgusting last week. I think even if he gets on it for one map, he absolutely will wreck the Gladiators. I think the Shock take this.
Yeah, I'd be shocked to see the Shock lose another one here. The Gladiators are a good team. They've shown that they can really be a strong defensive team in particular, but I don't think they have enough to take down Shock, who've been here over and over again. I think the Shock roll on. New York Excelsior or Vancouver Titans?
This one's tough. New York, famous for choking in the playoffs. The Titans, famous for not. Granted, still their first year. They're still young. I'm going to take the Titans in this one. I think New York's track record, they haven't been playing as great as of lately. They're still a very strong team. I think this will go the distance, but I think the Titans squeak this one out.
I was originally going to go with the Titans as well, but I'm going to switch it up and go New York here. New York with a big win over the Shock, who I think is one of the strongest teams right now, and another win against the Reign. They're New York. They could choke any moment. They've shown it over and over in playoffs, one after another. But after two huge victories against two of the best teams in the league right now, I'm going to take Excelsior to end up breaking their streak of playoffs and continuing to roll on in this one. That will shake us up and move us over to the League of Legends scene, where we had the LEC Finals happened this past weekend. We got another best of five between two powerhouse teams in Fnatic and G2. Unfortunately for me, as a Fnatic fan, they did fall short. Fnatic, after winning the first game, did end up losing in game five after Silver Scrapes was played. All they had left was the tears of Reckless leaving the stage. Great matchup, though. Did you get a chance to watch any of the series?
No, I didn't, but I was definitely following along your tweets and your Discord messages as you were live tweeting or live Discording, if we're going to go that direction. Reckless's breakdown on stage. You know what? I would argue there is no one more passionate about his job in esports in the world than Reckless. And, you know, there is nothing wrong with letting your emotions out after a heartbreaking defeat. Again, for Reckless, he has played his mind out for years. He has essentially carried that team when they've been rebuilding. He is literally a definition of a League of Legends athlete, or an esport athlete in general. He embodies everything you want in a player. And to see him break down like that on stage, it's gut-wrenching, because you want the best for the guy. He is a good guy. And it just sucks that this happens time and time again. But Reckless is a competitor. He'll bounce back. He'll use it as fuel for the fire. Good news is he still gets to go to Worlds. But he can't dethrone G2. G2 has just been an absolute force in the LEC. This is the matchup that we knew we were going to get. We predicted it back in the quarterfinals. We predicted it back in the first round. Pretty much knew about it before the split even started. It's going to come down to G2 and Fnatic. It's always going to come down to G2 and Fnatic, unless other teams do something crazy to really become competitive here. And it's just tough. It's tough.
I mean, these are your best two Western teams. I think there's no question about it. Both teams have dumpstered C9. Both teams have dumpstered Team Liquid. When you look at it, they are both very, very strong right now. Europe is looking incredibly strong as a region. These are arguably two of the best teams in the world. I would still argue that South Korea is probably going to bring some fire, as well as China. But when you look at it, these are by far the best Western teams, at least at this current iteration. So for me, I can see why the Fnatic players are disappointed. They lost the final. They lost to a huge rival. But you're playing one of the best teams in the world. You're playing a team that took down some of these huge Asian powerhouse teams at MSI. So for me, I think the fact that G2 has just continued to get stronger over the course of the summer split, Fnatic has as well. It's gut-wrenching to lose. I completely get releasing emotions. It's been a stressful split for a lot of different players over in EU and in NA. In particular, Fnatic has gone through some struggles, and I get the release of emotion. It makes sense. At the same point, I hope the players woke up today. I hope they realize what they accomplished. They took the best team in the world, arguably, to a best of five twice in back-to-back weeks. I mean, that is a huge accomplishment. G2 is praising Fnatic. When you look at it overall, I think there's a lot to take away. I think Joey Youngbuck's drafts ended up improving a ton over the course of the playoffs. I think they had questionable drafts prior to that. Even in the last weekend, I think they had questionable drafts. This weekend looked much cleaner. G2 also complimented that. So I'm very excited to see where this goes. I think G2 and Fnatic both have a lot of potential to make big, big noise come playoffs this year, or Worlds in particular. So I'm excited. It's disappointing in the moment, but at the same time, I think both these teams are incredible. I think this might be the best chance the Western world has had at a world championship in many, many years. Last year, obviously, they came out of the dust and made some noise. Fnatic, Cloud9, and G2 all making the Final Four, and then eventually losing to an Asian team. This year, with the finals in Europe, I think it's possible that we have a Western team winner. But SKT is still scary, and so is Griffin. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. Over to LCS. Well, actually, let's jump back. I just closed out of it. But the beginning round of the gauntlet for LEC, if I remember correctly, is Origin and Splice. Origin, that number three team from, I believe, the spring split. They finished number three, or maybe number two in the spring split. Very strong team. Deficio, the team operations manager over there, former analyst for the LEC, formerly known as the EULCS. He knows his way around. He knows the meta. He knows League of Legends. So they're going to come in very strategically driven. At the same point, they struggled in summer. Even with the strategy, they did not perform to the top of their ability. On the other side, Splice. Splice kind of came up in the summer split. They've looked really strong. I like Splice a lot as the three seed for EU. Even with the tactical side of Origin, I am going to take Splice to move on in this one.
I will agree with you. I will take Splice as well.
Well, let's see who you take over in NA. Oh, wait, the results are already done. We had Clutch Gaming take down FlyQuest 3-1. Then Clutch Gaming slapped around CLG 3-1. And then a beautiful reverse sweep against Team Solo Mid 3-2. I love the fact that Clutch Gaming is moving on to Worlds. I'm super excited about that, especially with the rebrand of Team Dignitas. But even more exciting is the fact that TSM cannot disappoint NA fans once again at Worlds.
I'm just glad that there's going to be one Worlds where I don't have to hear TSM chant. You know, they'll probably be still some TSM fans that get there and chant TSM fans, because that's what TSM fans do. They just, they have to be heard. Otherwise, they feel like they don't exist. No, it's great. I do not think a reverse sweep could have happened to a better team than TSM. Granted, pretty much everyone in TSM is going to get fired because of this, but they still won't rebuild their roster. They won't do anything that they actually need to do to make their team better. They'll probably replace a top laner, an elite top laner, with a rookie that's unproven, signed from nowhere. They'll, you know, switch their jungler out mid playoffs or do something. No, you know, they wouldn't do anything crazy like that. That's totally not TSM. No, I love it. I think it's great. I think Clutch Gaming moving on, especially after their heartbreaking defeat in the playoffs. But Joey, one other fact I want to point out real quick. There is a record that was set with Clutch Gaming going to Worlds, and it's a personal record. It is your boy and everyone's favorite top laner, Huni, becomes the first player to qualify for Worlds in three different regions. That is a stat among stats. That is absolutely fantastic. Huni is an absolute beast. He killed it on Fnatic on that amazing 18-0 team. He went to Korea. He played for SKT, did an amazing job there too. Didn't work out in the end. Comes back to NA after his Immortals run originally, and absolutely crushes it with Clutch Gaming now. Punches his ticket back to Worlds. That is one for the history books.
Yeah, big stuff. Making it from the EULCS from Fnatic. What was that, 2016, 2017? Then from there, coming to NA with Immortals, jumping over to SKT, the best team in South Korea, and then now doing it once again with Clutch Gaming. I mean, that's a huge resume to have. Bringing on three regions, not even a player like Faker can say that. because he signed millions of dollars over in Korea and he's never going to leave. But let's not mention that. Hooney's a great player. He's a great personality. I love him in the scene. And I think this is a really big accomplishment, not only for him, but for Clutch Gaming and NA as well. Clutch Gaming showed that they can fight toe-to-toe with the big dogs. They fought up against Team Liquid. They fought up against Cloud9. They didn't quite make it, but they showed that they deserve to be there after a huge run in the gauntlet. I'm excited to see Clutch represent NA. I'm excited to see Hooney back at Worlds. I'm excited for Worlds.
Worlds is going to be great, as it always is. Joey, I'm just looking forward to the fact that I'm not going to wake up at 3 a.m. to watch these games. Since it's going to be in Europe, the games are going to be like in the afternoon for us, maybe late morning. I'm super excited for that. Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get exclusive access to content that nobody else in the world can get unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we would love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to reach out to us. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us and this show?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. In addition to that, we stream regularly on Twitch, twitch.tv/OTN_live.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of Level Up, Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. Tongue twisters, Joey. Tongue twisters. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
level up. Level up.